the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It is Friday. Oh, not just any Friday. It's Friday the 13th, which makes me wonder when that other shoe is going to drop. You know, Fridays are days that typically Trump likes to fire people. And there are, if you watch cable news, they're saying today is the day that just might be Rod Rosenstein's last day. In fact, I saw a tweet a few minutes ago that said the White House says there will be breaking news on Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein between 2 and 4 p.m. Eastern today. So we shall see. It's already 3 o'clock here on the East Coast. So we'll find out, I guess, soon enough. If that's true, I wake up early in the morning and I walk into my studio and I start gathering the news of the day to put together my What's New segment that runs throughout the day on the Progressive Voices Network. By the time I hit the air at 3 o'clock, the show is on Progressive Voices at 6 because it's tape delayed, but we are live at 3 Eastern. So much happens that it's already usually dated. So lately I've been winding up doing What's News Live, and we'll do it that way today because there are a few other stories that have been updated. For instance, the pardoning of Scooter Libby. Seriously, that's a name we hadn't heard in years, thankfully, until yesterday when we started hearing rumors that Trump was going to pardon Scooter Libby, Dick Cheney's former chief of staff when he was vice president, who was guilty of, get this, obstruction of justice and lying to the FBI. Now, what kind of signal does that send to the people who are talking to Robert Mueller, many of whom, Donald Trump might be trying to send a signal that, saying it's okay to lie to the FBI. It's okay to obstruct justice because I can pardon you. He can pardon them for federal offenses. Now, he can't pardon them for state crimes, which is a problem that Michael Cohen, his attorney, might run into, and some others as well, including Trump himself. But Scooter Libby, oh my God. We'll get to that in today's What's News, along with some other news. Let me tell you, today's Friday. I thought, even though this is one of those days when my head is spinning, you know, the one time that Donald Trump, his prognostications came true.
The heads would spin. Your head will spin.
Your head will spin.
Your head will spin.
Yeah, my head is spinning. There's stuff like this guy, Elliot Broidy, who is a top donor to the Republican Party, and Michael Cohen, Trump's attorney, arranged for a $1.6 million hush payout to a former Playboy model on behalf of him. And now the news came out more about the relationship, which is salacious and not really any of our business as far as I'm concerned. The woman apparently had an abortion, and let me see if I can find it. Of course, I lost it. Submitted his resignation to the Republican man. I lost it. I had it here. The Republican Party, where he was one of the chief fundraisers, and they've accepted it. a finance official at the Republican National Committee. He submitted his resignation to Ronna McDaniel, and she accepted it. This is all this stuff is all coming together in a weird way. All this weird conflagration. Here it is. RNC deputy finance chair resigns after reports of $1.6 million payment. You can't make this shit up. So you got Scooter Libby pardoned. You got this Broidy guy resigning. The Inspector General's report is out on Andrew McCabe. And very quick, a tweet from Daniel Dale at the Toronto Star says, Inspector General finds former FBI director, Deputy Director Andrew McCabe repeatedly misled investigators. So, and this just broke really just not too long ago, so I haven't had time to fully digest it all. There's too much going on. Is the point I'm making. So we're going to try to lighten things up a little bit. Our old friend Deborah Newell Tornello will be with us today. We're going to talk a bit about Florida's medical marijuana industry, of which her family is part. And we'll get an update on that. And when Deborah's here, we like to poke fun at the state we live in. So I'll have some oy Florida stories as well. It's Friday, after all. And so I'll try to take our minds a little bit off of the insanity that's going on in our world. And yes, it is insane. But let's start with the live and extended edition of What's News.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
And as I mentioned, Donald Trump has pardoned Scooter Libby, Dick Cheney's former chief of staff, who was convicted of obstruction of justice and lying to the FBI. In a statement, and this is unbelievable, but everything he says is unbelievable, Trump says, I don't know Mr. Libby, but for years I have heard that he has been treated unfairly. Well, that's because you watch fucking Fox so-called news, you moron. That's why you've heard that. His statement went on to say, hopefully this full pardon will help rectify a very sad portion of his life and send a strong message to those who might be tempted to lie on Donald Trump's behalf. On Twitter, Jeremy Scahill reminds us what Scooter Libby did, tweeting, he helped out an undercover CIA operative in retaliation for her husband debunking the yellow cake uranium lie that was used to sell the war in Iraq. Yeah, well, that's one of many things. Allies of Donald Trump are worried that recordings made by his lawyer, Michael Cohen, were seized by federal investigators in Monday's raid of Cohen's offices and residences. By the way, CNN just had a breaking news banner that says Cohen is under criminal investigation. Last night, Aaron Burnett spoke with reporter Tom Hamburger about this Cohen story.
The Washington Post with this report tonight that Michael Cohen taped conversations with associates. And now some of those people are worried that those recordings are in the hands of federal investigators, that this all could have been seized mm-hmm. during the raid on Monday. Out front now, Tom Hamburger, a reporter with the Washington Post, who broke the story. And Tom, this is pretty incredible. You're talking about Cohen, who's worked with Trump for a dozen years, and now you're learning may have taped conversations.
Well, Michael Cohen, you know, was a very loyal guy, is and was a very loyal guy, loyal to Donald Trump. And Donald Trump used to indicate and did, in fact, publicly recently that he would sometimes tape conversations. We don't know that he actually did, but he would talk about it and use it as a sort of tactic of leverage, as leverage. And Michael Cohen, from those that we talked to, suggests that he did much the same thing and in some cases actually did record conversations and at least in a couple of instances replayed them for a small audience.
I mean, yeah, you have a story in here where during the presidential race, and Cohen, you know, technically wasn't involved, although, of course, he was advocating for Trump regularly, had a reputation among campaign staff as someone to avoid because he did tape conversations and he played a conversation back at one point to somebody. So do you have any knowledge, Tom, as to who might have been taped and what sorts of things might be on these recordings?
You know, first of all, I want to make clear, we know only that Michael Cohen was widely known to have taped, and there was one person who was familiar with him who told us he stored them in digital fashion on his computers. The FBI, in this raid early this week, seized Michael Cohen's computers, and so if there were recordings on there, these digital recordings would be available to investigators after going through a couple of legal hoops that are necessary before prosecutors can get their hands on these tapes. But it was very disconcerting to several people we talked to in Trump world because they'd heard the rumors promoted sometimes by Michael Cohen himself that he occasionally recorded calls or recorded visits with people in his office.
And again, Cohen is implicated in this case of the RNC funder with the Playboy playmate and the abortion and the whole thing. Yes, it's enough to make your head spin. The long-anticipated new book by former FBI Director James Comey will be officially released on Tuesday. Now, some excerpts leaked out yesterday. Lawrence O'Donnell shared a bit on his show last night.
The book called A Higher Loyalty will be released on Tuesday, but excerpts of the book in a New York Times review show that the book compares Donald Trump to a mafia boss and includes this description of the president. The president is unethical and untethered to truth and institutional values. His leadership is transactional, ego-driven, and about personal loyalty. Rupert Murdoch's New York Post, the president's favorite newspaper, was the first to report what the book says about what the New York Post calls the P tape. Uh-oh. That is a reference, of course, to the famous dossier compiled about Donald Trump's relationship with Russia and Russians. The dossier contains a description of a time that Donald Trump spent in a Moscow hotel suite with prostitutes who urinated on his bed. That episode in that hotel room has not been confirmed. That is part of the dossier that has never been confirmed. James Comey's book says Donald Trump brought up what he called the golden showers thing, adding that it bothered him if there was even a 1% chance his wife Melania thought it was true. He just rolled on unprompted, explaining why it couldn't possibly be true, ending by saying he was thinking of asking me to investigate the allegation to prove it was a lie. I said it was up to him. According to the Washington Post, Comey describes Trump as having been obsessed with the prostitutes portion of the infamous dossier, raising it at least 4 times with the FBI head. I'm a germaphobe, Trump told him in a follow-up call on January 11th, 2017, according to Comey's account. There's no way I would let people pee on each other around me. No way. Later, the president asked what could be done to lift the cloud because it was so painful for First Lady Melania Trump. The New York Post goes on to report Comey said he privately wondered why Melania might think there was even a 1% chance the allegations were true,
right,
claiming there is zero chance his own wife would believe such a claim. In what kind of marriage to what kind of man does a spouse conclude there is only a 99% chance her husband didn't do that?
Well, that answer writes itself, doesn't it? We're talking about Donald Trump here. And if I had two dimes to rub together, I'd bet good money that there's some sort of prenup that Melania has with Donald Trump, and he's in violation of it with these trysts that he's had. Ugh. God, this is all just so distasteful. And meanwhile, you know, there's the question of Syria looming out there. I believe the State Department at this hour is holding a briefing on what they're going to do or not, because, you know, Donald Trump doesn't like to telegraph those things. Meanwhile, Trump is seething about this Comey book. He was up early this morning tweeting, James Comey is a proven leaker and liar. Virtually everyone in Washington thought he should be fired for the terrible job he did until he was, in fact, fired. He leaked classified information for which he should be prosecuted. He lied to Congress under oath. He is a weak and untruthful slimeball who was, as time has proven, a terrible director of the FBI. His handling of the crooked Hillary Clinton case and the events surrounding it will go down as one of the worst botched jobs of history. It was my great honor to fire James Comey. He literally tweeted that out. The president of the United States literally in two tweets tweeted what I just read with a terrible impression of the president. we couldn't make this stuff up if we tried. And if somebody had, if you know, we were living in a normal world and we actually had an actual real president, a presidential president, and somebody tried to present a script like this for a movie, it would be roundly rejected, as this presidency should have been. The first interview in Comey's press tour, and he's going to be on Colbert Tuesday night. He's going to be on Rachel Maddow Show Thursday night. He's going to be everywhere. The first interview will be this Sunday night at 10 on ABC with George Stephanopoulos. They released a short excerpt of his conversation, and it's pretty, just like everything else, unbelievable.
As you headed into Trump Tower that day, were you nervous?
Yes.
Comey was with a group of intelligence agency heads, briefing Trump and his top aides on how the Russians interfered in our election.
President-elect Trump's first question was to confirm that it had no impact on the election. And then the conversation, to my surprise, moved into a PR conversation about how the Trump team would position this and what they could say about this. They actually started talking about drafting a press release with us still sitting there. And the reason that was so striking to me is that that's just not done, that the intelligence community does intelligence, the White House does PR and spin.
You also said you were struck by what they didn't ask.
Very much. No one, to my recollection, asked, so what's coming next from the Russians? How might we stop it? What's the future look like? It was all, what can we say about what they did and how it affects the election that we just had?
Comey then asked to meet alone with Trump, to warn him about that now infamous Steele dossier, unverified information on Trump's ties to Russia, including allegations of Trump's encounters with prostitutes in Moscow.
I'm about to meet with a person who doesn't know me, has just been elected president of the United States. By all accounts, and from my watching him during the campaign, could be volatile. And I'm about to talk to him about allegations that he was involved with prostitutes in Moscow and that the Russians taped it and have leverage over him.
Was there any choice there? Why, if this was salacious and this particular part of the dossier unverified, still unverified, by the way?
Yes. So far as when I got fired, it was unverified.
Did you tell him that the Steele dossier had been financed by his political opponents?
No. I didn't even think I
used
the
term Steele dossier. It was first financed by Paul Singer.
I just talked about additional material.
What does that mean?
Did he have a right to know that?
That had been financed by his political opponents? I don't know the answer to that. It wasn't necessary for my goal, which was to alert him that we had this information.
How graphic did you get?
I think as graphic as I needed to be. I started to tell him about the allegation was that he had been involved with prostitutes in a hotel in Moscow in 2013 during a visit for the Miss Universe pageant, and that the Russians had filmed the episode, and he interrupted very defensively and started talking about it. You know, do I look like a guy who needs hookers?
Oh, yeah.
And
yes,
I assumed he was asking that rhetorically. I didn't answer that, and I just moved on and explained, sir, I'm not saying that we credit this, I'm not saying we believe it. We just thought it very important that you know.
Did you tell him you thought it wasn't true or you didn't know if it was true or not?
I never said I don't believe it, because I couldn't say one way or another.
How weird was that briefing?
Really weird. It was almost an out-of-body experience for me. I was floating above myself, looking down, saying, you're sitting here briefing the incoming president of the United States about prostitutes in Moscow.
January 27th, at a private dinner in the White House, President Trump raises the issue again.
He says he may want me to investigate it to prove that it didn't happen. And then he says something that distracted me, because he said, you know, if there's even a 1% chance my wife thinks that's true, that's terrible. And I remember thinking, how could your wife think there's a 1% chance you were with prostitutes peeing on each other in Moscow? I'm a flawed human being, but there's literally zero chance that my wife would think that was true. So what kind of marriage to what kind of man does your wife think there's only a 99% chance you didn't do that? And I said to him, sir, when he started talking about it, I may order you to investigate that. I said, sir, that's up to you, but you'd want to be careful about that, because it might create a narrative that we're investigating you personally. And second, it's very difficult to prove something didn't happen.
Did you believe his denial?
Honestly, never thought these words would come out of my mouth, but I don't know whether the current president of the United States with prostitutes peeing on each other in Moscow in 2013. It's possible, but I don't know.
That's the former director of the FBI speaking. Apparently, they sat for a five-hour interview, so it'll be whittled down to, I don't know how long the interview is. It'll air Sunday night at 10 o'clock, but just the first of what will likely be many interviews with James Comey over the coming weeks as his book is released on Tuesday. Last night, around 9 o'clock, Trump issued an executive order creating a task force evaluating the U.S. Postal Service's finances and operations. This, and it all has to do with Amazon, because Trump doesn't like the way the Washington Post covers him. And Amazon and Washington Post are both owned by Jeff Bezos. This guy is demented and sick and does not belong anywhere near the White House. Just saying. The president on Thursday also ordered top administration officials to look into rejoining the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the trade pact he rejected just after taking office and criticized as a disaster throughout his campaign. I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried. Just a little bit of what might be good news. Sorry, I'm looking at a CNN page and reading Sarah Sanders speaking to reporters after the president issues a pardon for Cheney aide, and State Department hold news briefing as U.S. considers action in Syria. That scares the daylights out of me. Stay tuned. But this is the story I wanted to tell you about. Let me just read from here because I don't know quite what to make of it. Faced with growing pressure from educators, Arizona Governor Doug Ducey announced Thursday his plan to give teachers 20% pay raises by the beginning of the 2020 school year. Under his proposal, teachers' pay would increase 9% in the 2018 school year, then another 5% for the next 2 years, which would boost the average salary to $58,000 from the current $48,000 by 2020. But it does say, let me see if I can't find it, that teachers are, here, educators there reacted to the announcement with questions and skepticism. So we'll see. Although on the surface it looks good, somehow I don't trust. It's hard to trust these days. That said, I'm going to play a little song in honor of the teachers, and then we'll come back on the other side with Deborah Newell Tornello. We're going to talk medical marijuana and Florida, because it's Friday, damn it. This is Lauren Mayer.
We've seen teachers protest, doing their best to make this shame stop. And all they're asking for is to earn more than a clerk at GameStop. Pay your teachers well, so they can tell we think they're super. They buy their own supplies. Some barely get by driving an Uber. You can't claim to value kids when our schools are on the skids, so that we can give tax breaks to 1%ers. Schools don't have enough funds, which is what we've done with each budget cut job. That's the cost of a lousy boss like Betsy DeVos, who's a real nut job. So pay your teachers well. They work like hell, overcoming plenty. They need rooms that don't smell like a sewer, and books that are newer than 1920. 'Cause they deal with our rug rats, some of whom are spoiled rats, so our teachers deserve pay.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right. Thanks to Lauren Mayer for that little bit of a segue into our next guest. It's been a while since she's been here. Let's do the quickie.
Boy of a desert.
My old friend Deborah Newell Tornello used to be a regular on the program. She lives on the other side of the state of Florida from me, and we'd get together every week or so and have fun at the expense of our state. She joins us today to do that again and to give an update on some other stuff going on. Hey, Deborah.
Hi, Nicole. How are you doing?
Hanging in there. It's crazy times we're living in. It's hard to keep your head screwed on straight these days, isn't it?
No lie. It feels actually like the whole country's turning into Florida.
It does. It really,
I can't keep up with it. You know, you have breaking news and you turn and you go, oh my God, breaking news. Boom, boom. And there's all this noise. And then suddenly we're breaking into this breaking news with breaking news. I've never seen anything like it.
Right.
And that's just the national scene. And then, of course, there's Florida, which, you know, we expect it to be a lunatic asylum here. But now the whole country's come down to our level. So
it has. Florida it doesn't seem as crazy lately as it used to be.
No, comparatively calm, really.
Yeah. I
mean, we're just the same old parade of half-nude people, masturbating guys with man buns doing upskirt videos, pipe bombs, and drug addicts.
And guns, unfortunately.
And guns, always guns.
Always guns. You know what? Let's start with a couple of Florida stories and get that out of the way.
Sure.
Because there's other stuff I want to talk to you about that I think is really exciting and a good way to segue into the weekend. But I saw this story, and you know, it used to be we would do these Florida stories and there was some measure of humor among them. The ones I found today are frightening, like this one. Reading from the Channel 10, the local ABC affiliate's website, a pistol-packing Marjorie Stoneman Douglas teacher who said he'd be willing to be trained to carry a gun to protect the high school faces a criminal charge after he left his Glock 9mm in a public restroom where it was later fired by an apparently intoxicated homeless man, according to the Broward Sheriff's Office. He's a science teacher. He told deputies he accidentally left the gun in a stall at a bathroom at the Deerfield Beach Pier during a visit to the beach on Sunday. While going back to retrieve it, he heard a gunshot, and once back inside the bathroom, saw this other 69-year-old man holding the gun. The teacher then snatched the gun out of the drunken man's hands. The teacher was arrested, thankfully, and charged with failing to safely store a firearm, a second-degree misdemeanor, punishable by a maximum of 60 days in jail.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
They want to arm teachers, you know. Not saying all teachers are like that. No, the opposite. Most teachers are incredibly responsible, and most teachers are against this. I believe the teachers' union is against arming teachers. They have enough to deal with. And at this, I couldn't believe it. The gun goes off. Yeah, well,
the gun
of course
goes
that,
off.
Yeah,
the
and
guy,
it was a Glock,
yes.
From what I read. They are rather notorious for going off. They unbelievable.
The guy who fired the gun, by the way, told the police that he fired the gun to see whether it was loaded.
Oh, wonderful.
There's the Florida part
there
of the story.
There's the in Florida. Oh, my goodness. Well, and the other thing about, I'm sorry about the dogs barking in the background. They are uncontrollable at the moment. It must be somebody walking another dog down the street, and they think the whole street belongs to them.
Sure. If it was my house, there would be a squirrel out in the backyard. Jackson.
Yeah, that too. And then right now we have a lot of birds because mm-hmm. it's spring, and so they see a bird and they go completely bananas.
Uh-huh.
But anyhow, no, this ooh. What happened with this teacher, he was not even, he was arrested, but he doesn't face any discipline from the school board.
Wow.
Which So really, then he can go on ahead and get training and bring a gun to school.
Although, no, Broward County, where I live, they voted down any funding for arming teachers. They instead, so they said, because counties can decide whether or not they want to do this program. And Broward County, where Parkland is, said no. Right. Thanks, but no thanks. We're not arming our teachers.
Because I had not read that, but that's good to know. I hope that Pinellas, where I am, does the same thing. I don't understand it.
Nor do I.
But anyway, I have a few stories too. But okay. Let's start with one in my neck of the woods. The cops call him the man bun creeper for what he's doing in public. So apparently this man is still at large. A Florida man who wears his hair in a bun is wanted. I know that in itself is kind of funny. Is wanted after surveillance cameras caught him shooting upskirt videos at Publix. So what this guy does is he takes his cell phone and he creeps up behind women wearing dresses or skirts and videotapes them to get shots of their underwear or whatever. Unbelievable. Anyway, so St. Pete police are calling the suspect the man bun creeper on Twitter as they released video from the Publix on Roosevelt Boulevard shot around noon on April 3rd. The man can be seen crouching near women in skirts and using his cell phone to record the images. Anyone with information on this man's identity can call. And then there's the number for the St. Pete police or hashtag tip 411.
Ugh. God, that's nice. Creepy. So now, and you're going to be on the lookout for any man wearing their hair in a bun. All right.
He's kind of iconic looking, but I personally, I'm a fan of wearing sweatpants or jeans to the grocery store. So just if you're out there listening, man bun creeper, sorry.
No upskirt here for you.
No, sorry.
All right, I've got one. This is kind of sad, but a Florida man was arrested for calling 911 to ask dispatchers to find the singers Drake and Lil Wayne. The 28-year-old Fellsmere man, I don't even know where Fellsmere is, was arrested on a misdemeanor abuse of 911 charge. He called 911 and told the dispatcher, quote, "Find Drake, find Lil Wayne, they know who I am." He hung up, but the dispatcher called him back, and then he began to ramble random codes and said, "They need to figure out the movie It, the scary movie." Then officers arrived at his home. The man was in the parking lot shouting that he was God and that the officers needed to find him Drake and Lil Wayne. That's when the officers told him he couldn't call 911 unless it was an emergency, but he replied that he could call 911 for whatever he wanted and told the officers they should just take him to jail. So he was given a warning and then the officers left. But according to the report, he called 911 two more times shouting about needing to speak to the president and ranting about government conspiracies involving the president. And so then officers went back and took him into custody. This is the duh part of it. The man was booked into the Indian River County Jail, where he remained held on $500 bond. The report said he may suffer from mental health issues.
Hashtag love child found. That was terrible. I'm sorry.
May suffer. I mean, come on. I mean, the guy, instead of in jail, should have been Baker acted or something.
He should be looked after properly. Yes. But, you know, I believe, closed all of our psychiatric facilities. So during the Reagan years and onward, everything was shuttered.
Yep.
So there's nowhere for people to go for help anymore. Anyway,
you got one?
Oh, of course. I have a whole lineup. This is Florida. I mean, we just need to go back 3 or 4 days and I can fill my computer with stories. This is what happens when you come to Florida, even when you're from Europe, although, you know, present company accepted, of course. French soccer player had a knife in his briefs and red wine in his hand after a bizarre Miami break-in. A former French star footballer who now directs FC Miami City's soccer club was arrested Wednesday for smashing open a condominium apartment door, stealing a knife, and spraying the apartment and the tenant with foam from a fire extinguisher.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Gregory René Robert Dutille, 37, was taken into custody while holding a cup of red wine, because, you know, French, wearing only his boxer shorts and a pair of socks.
Okay.
Because it's Florida.
Right, it's hot.
It's hot, exactly. He was booked into Turner Guilford Knight Correctional Center and charged with armed burglary, burglary with assault or battery, two counts of criminal mischief, possession of cocaine, and this is the important one, improper use of a fire extinguisher.
they said, I didn't know that was a crime.
Right? I know. Apparently that is a crime. So you're on alert. Police said that just before handcuffing Dutille, they noticed a bulge in the left side of his white briefs. Or maybe he was just happy to see them. The defendant then reached for the bulge, at which point Officer Russell observed it to be a silver kitchen knife. The arresting officer wrote in the arrest form. I'm going back and forth between English and French pronunciation. Right. Officer Russell immediately confiscated the knife. So this guy, apparently there was a woman there, and he came in broken and started spraying her in the face and spraying the apartment with foam from the fire extinguisher while standing there in his underwear, and in the non-fire extinguisher hand, he had red wine, which somehow also ended up on the floor along with all the foam. So,
oh my.
Yeah. Just another Florida weekend.
This one is might be my favorite one of the day. Authorities say a Florida woman is blaming a windy day for the cocaine that police found in her purse. Channel 10 reports that Kenesha Posey was one of two passengers in a car stopped by Fort Pierce police in late March. Police say an officer smelled marijuana and that after searching the car, cocaine and marijuana in separate bags were found inside a purse this woman had on her lap. Authorities say they questioned her about the drugs. According to the police report, she responded, quote, "It's a windy day. It must have flown through the window and into my purse."
I've never heard that one.
No, it was great.
That's creative. You have to give it to
her. Very creative. She was charged with a felony count of cocaine possession and a misdemeanor count of marijuana possession. She was later released on bond. It wasn't immediately known if she has a lawyer.
I'm just holding it for a seagull that was flying over.
Right. No, the wind blew it into the car and into her purse. That's got to be the best excuse ever.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard one that good. That's really creative. Okay, let's see. Here's another Florida one. Florida woman tried to trade her car for a kind of chalky yet iconic Massachusetts candy. Now, I've actually had tasted this candy before. And, you know, there are some wonderful candies in America. I prefer English chocolates, but Necco wafers, that
yes.
should not.
Oh, well, this is the thing now, because apparently the company that makes Necco wafers is going out of business.
Right. And this one particular, she's a real fan of, I guess, a real fan of Necco wafers. She's ready to trade a 2003 Honda Accord for the remaining stock of Necco wafers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, Snickers bars, I could understand, or you know, what are those peppermint patties? Those are good, but Necco wafers.
Yeah, those things—they taste like Tums.
They are. They're disgusting. I'm sorry, Necco wafers, but you deserved, and you know, that's just no. That's not even really a candy. It's like it is like blackboard chalk.
But you know what? They also make those little, you know, those Valentine's Day candies that have the little sayings on them, the little hearts.
Oh right, right.
They make
those
too.
Called? I know what you're talking
Sweethearts
about.
Sweethearts or something like that.
The one that we all sort of like Valentine candy hearts, and then we do the hashtag on Twitter every year and make up dirty ones and political ones.
Sure.
And, yes. Right. Yes.
So
rejected candy hearts. That was what they're disgusting. And
yes.
No. But it's certainly not worth a car. And it's not even like an old nasty car. It's, you know, a nice 2003 Honda Accord. That's a good college car.
No kidding.
Good mileage.
I could use one for my kid.
Take you further than a bunch of candy. Sure.
Absolutely. A Florida man ended up in jail after his dashboard camera showed police more than he intended. The Palm Beach Post reports that after 25-year-old Javier Moran was involved in a crash on April 5th, he told a sheriff's deputy he had been cut off by another driver and he could prove it with his dashboard camera. He then signed a consent waiver to search the camera. When the Palm Beach County Sheriff's deputy reviewed the footage, he saw Moran burglarizing a beauty store. Authorities say the video showed Moran taking a baseball bat from the trunk and someone using the bat to break the glass door to the store. He was arrested on burglary charges.
Oh, my goodness. I hope this guy never breathes.
That is so Florida. And that's just from today. This just happened.
Unbelievable. Oh, dear. Just picturing that. I'd love to see the look on the cop's face when they're going through the video and they think they just got the guy on something minor traffic stuff, and now they've got him on smashing a window and breaking and entering.
How stupid can one man be?
Well, we keep upping the ante on that in this state. Okay, here's one. A Florida woman arrested for DUI on a horse. Apparently, that's a thing. Florida woman arrested for DUI on a horse. A call from a concerned citizen led to the arrest of a Polk City woman on a charge of DUI on horseback. I didn't even know that was a charge.
I didn't either.
Not that I'm saying you should do it or that it should be allowed, but it just is, you know, it's the year 2018. Okay.
Right.
Deputies responded to Combe Road near North Crystal Lake in Lakeland. A passerby had called 911 to report seeing a woman who appeared confused and possibly in danger. They arrived to find Donna Byrne, 53 years old, on a horse and smelling of alcohol. She had red, watery eyes and was staggering. If she was staggering, how could she have been on a horse? Or was the horse staggering because he just didn't like the way she was riding? A field sobriety test was conducted and she was arrested. She provided breath samples of 0.157 and 0.161.
Ooh, that's pretty high.
That's pretty high, especially for a woman who is not going to be all that large. Ms. Byrne, she doesn't look like a very big person. Ms. Byrne was obviously not in any condition to be on the road, much less on a horse. She not only put herself and the horse in danger, but anyone who was driving on that road, which is typically very busy. Well, I hope the horse is okay. She was also charged with animal neglect, and the horse was taken to the Polk County Sheriff's Animal Control Livestock Facility. Okay, wait. The sheriff's office has a livestock facility because crimes like
that. Well, they have horses. Maybe that's, you know, where don't they have, they probably have, you know, mounted police in some sense. Most police departments do. I know I've seen Broward sheriffs or Fort Lauderdale police on horseback.
Okay. I thought it meant for, you know, that this happened a lot. That they did a special, special place for all the horses that were being ridden by people who were drunk. But okay. I misunderstood that. Anyhow,
maybe that's it.
Now I'm Florida.
Okay. And there's a few Florida stories. I want to take some time. Deborah Newell Tornello is with us, and it's been a while since we've spoken. But the last time you were on, you told us about your family business. Now, your family has long been, you have nurseries, right?
That's correct. Originally, Robert's business was a wholesale nursery providing mostly bamboo and large tropical plants for commercial interiors around the world, but a lot in North America, and gradually segued into organic vegetables, produce, and herbs. And in 2015, we applied to the state to be one of the first round of licenses for growing medical cannabis. That was at the time before we had Amendment 2 passed. We had a very narrowly written law, which was going to be just low THC, high CBD oil produced for mainly for children with epilepsy. And then they expanded the law a little bit. But anyhow, we did not get one of the first five licenses. And then we entered into a long legal challenge, and that went on and on and on. And then the last time that I spoke to you was, I believe, August of last year. We had just been awarded the license. So after you get the license, you go through a process where you have to meet all the different standards that the state sets forth, and I won't bore you with all of them. But then they come down from the Department of Health and check off a long checklist that, you know, yes, you have this, yes, you have that. And a lot of that is security and this is a whole long list of them. And then they give you the authorization to begin cultivation. So we received that, And I sent you a picture earlier. I don't know if you had a chance to put it up yet, but there's Robert and me in the greenhouse, one of the greenhouses, with some of the first plants from Three Boys Farm. And Three Boys Farm, that's named after our three sons, obviously, or maybe not obviously if you didn't know we had three boys, but we do.
There's the picture.
It was Three Boys Farm with an F, and now we're Three Boys Farm, Three Boys PHARM. So it sounds the same. And we are going to be, our website is under construction at the moment, but it will be the number three, boys, PHARM.com. And that should be live probably within about 6 weeks, I would say, a month to 6 weeks. And excitement, we have a wonderful facility already secured and under renovation for our first dispensary. And that's going to be in downtown St. Petersburg. And we will be at first operating a delivery from out of that dispensary in about a 100-mile radius from St. Pete, and then we will be opening further dispensaries around the state, one probably in, hopefully in your area, in South Florida, and one in the Panhandle, and probably one up toward the northeast or north central, northeast area.
So you'll be all over the state?
Yes, eventually we will be, yes.
This is really exciting.
It is. And I hope that you'll come to our grand opening. We are on track to open the first dispensary in probably August of this year. So that's going to be, it's been a long, arduous journey, but so worth it. And we couldn't be more excited or thrilled.
It is really exciting. So the medical marijuana, we passed, was it Amendment 2?
Amendment 2. We passed that the same time that Donald Trump was elected president or got in to be president or whatever happened. I'm not sure what happened. But so even though we had sort of like, a you know, that happened, but we had some positivity that night. We passed Amendment 2 by a tremendous margin. I think it was 73 or 74% of Floridians of both, you know, parties and independents overwhelmingly said that we want this in our state. So, yay.
but that being said, we still don't have, you know, a plethora of medical marijuana dispensaries or even doctors that prescribe it. I mean, have you found that there are more of them coming around? I mean, what are you seeing in terms of the proliferation of availability in Florida?
Well, we continue to really work on because we have an amazing medical team working with Three Boys Farm, and once we are open and up and running, obviously our cultivation is up and running right now, but not the dispensary just yet. We have to first grow, harvest, and process the product. But we will be doing patient education and doctor education. I agree. There's just probably not enough doctors, especially in certain areas of the state. And the other problem that continues to be a roadblock to patients is there are certain municipal bans on dispensaries. I'm sure you've heard about this. Certain areas, mm-hmm. I believe Naples is one, you know, where the city council will hold a vote and say, no, we're not going to have any dispensaries here.
I believe my town where I live in Coral Springs is like that as well.
That's really a shame. I'm hoping that, and I firmly believe that once the stigma wears away, when they see that this is a business that is that we are going to be good citizens, part of the community, providing jobs, providing medicine to people, and you know, they are sort of holding in their heads this outdated and very misconstrued idea of what cannabis is. And you know, we are the dispensaries, the MMTCs that are already up and running have really been doing a good job in terms of dispelling that myth. You know, they are not having crime coming up. In fact, when you have a medical cannabis dispensary, we have security and great lighting, and it's such a myth that the crime goes up. I don't know, you know, I know there was a big push by certain groups back when they were trying to defeat Amendment 2, the anti-cannabis and anti-drug, you know, the, you know who I'm talking about. I don't get too far into the weeds on that. But so unfortunately, there's still some stigma, and that's holding it back. And also, they are really not issuing licenses as quickly as they are supposed to, according to the statute. I believe they are saying that the department is just really behind on because of a lot of the litigation that's going on. I can't speak to that because I'm not one of their attorneys, but I do know that there are patients that are waiting, and they shouldn't have to wait. Thankfully, we have the ability, and we will too once we're open in August, to do home delivery. So that sort of helps a lot when there's, you know, if your town doesn't allow a dispensary to be there, hopefully you're within 100 miles or so of a home delivery, and we can come to you. So,
wow.
Yeah, I think, and that's really also a really wonderful thing for moms and dads who have a sick kid, and it's difficult to, you know, pack them in the car and take them somewhere if they're not well. Or if you're somebody that's in pain and you're suffering at home, or you're going through chemo, you know, the last thing you want to do on some days is climb into the car and drive somewhere. And if you're the one with the card and you're not particularly, let's say you don't have a caregiver that's also with it, has a card, you're the one that has to go to fill your order from your physician. So having home delivery solves that problem. You can just go online or on the phone and have the dispensary come to you.
The law also reads that you can't actually smoke the physical plant. You can't get buds and smoke them. You can't roll a joint. It's got to be vape.
That's currently under review legally too. There's a big lawsuit. I believe John Morgan is the one that headed that up. But there's a lot of interested parties that have joined with him on that front, and that's in the works. You probably read about the recent ruling by Judge Givers, I believe, regarding Joe Redner's lawsuit. He is a gentleman, a businessman. He owns several adult clubs in Hillsborough County and beyond, and he had stage 4 lung cancer and has been successfully treating that by juicing cannabis. And he sued for the right to grow his own cannabis at home and emulsify it or juice it. And she, this week, ruled that he had the right to do that.
Wow.
Of course, yeah. And that we are, you know, you'd think that being on deck to be opening our own business in that front, that we would be against people growing their own. But we are not. We are actually all in favor of open access to people. We want people to be able to get their medicine. We think it's good for everybody. Not everybody is going to be able to grow their own. Not everybody has the facilities or the time. But if they can and they want to, they ought to be able to. And we really applaud that decision. Unfortunately, the department immediately filed to get it stayed so that they could file an appeal. And that's probably going to take to the end of the year. But it's still moving in the right direction. But as we all know, the law takes a long time. Sometimes everything grinds rather slowly.
So right now, Deborah, with you're actually, I put the picture up here. I'll put it up again for those watching on YouTube. It's a great photo of you and Robert with some massive plants behind you.
That was a few weeks ago. They're even bigger now, and there's many more and of all different sizes and cultivars that we are growing. So sorry, go on.
No, that's okay. It's very exciting. Then you've got to go through the whole manufacturing process. What are you, like, manufacturing cartridges that can be vaped, or how are you going to be selling the product in your dispensary when it opens in August?
Well, we will have an extraction lab. And the cannabis will be processed very, very carefully. And now, remember, we are growing it without pesticides. We are the only organic nursery, organic farm that was licensed.
Wow.
And even though there is no such thing as USDA organic certification for cannabis, because it's still not legal at the federal level, so a federal agency like the USDA can't, by law, certify it as organic, but we are growing it in the same way that we were growing our USDA certified organic vegetables, with rainwater and organic soils and organic methods. So what we do, we will be extracting it and testing it. We have a neuroscientist, Dr. Greg Gerdeman, whom you spoke to
last year. He's been on the show, yes. Right.
Yes. And he's going to be overseeing a lot of that process to make sure everything is very uniform, because there will be different, different levels of CBD to THC depending on the patient's needs. And we're going to be doing, yes, cartridges for vaporizing oils and tinctures, everything that is permitted under Amendment 2 at the moment. We will be selling edibles eventually. I don't know if we'll be doing edibles right away, but we will. We plan on it fully. And so there will be gummies and candies and things like that. So that's it. Now, once if whole flower becomes legal, and we certainly hope it does, we will be providing that as well in a whole range of different cultivars. We like to call them cultivars, not strains, as Greg is always reminding me. It's not a strain. Viruses are strains.
Uh-huh.
Cannabis is a cultivar.
Oh, good to know.
Or a varietal.
and the all the different varietals, for instance, there's the sativa, and then there's the indica. And then in those, there are different, varietals of it's not very
different terpenes.
Different terpenes.
Yes, different terpenes, which are sort of the aromatic component. And if you want to look that up and anyone's really interested in the science of it, there's CBD and THC, which everybody's familiar with, but right. There are some other ones as well. And so we will be growing a whole range of them and offering just a broad array to Florida's patients so that and grown without pesticides and without artificial chemicals and using sunlight and rain. And I think it's just so exciting because Florida is just the perfect environment for it.
It is. It figures it's Florida that we're so late to the party, as it were. Right?
But we're over the main hurdle, but we've still got lots of hurdles.
Are many doctors writing, are giving cards, or do you have to go searching out for a doctor? Because we haven't even explored that down here because it seems so far away.
You know, I should have pulled up the link for you, but if anybody's interested, you can go to the Department of Health website and go to the medical marijuana program. It should be on there. And they actually have a list of all the certified doctors on that website. So if you just Google Florida Department of Health medical cannabis or medical marijuana, that should bring up the department. And that will have there's a link on that page that will take you to a list of all the currently certified doctors, so you can find one that's close to you. So there are some. Obviously, we would love to see more, and there will be more. There are more every month, but
sure.
it's an ongoing process. And again, as more people are open about it, and as more people benefit from it, talk about it, have access to it, the better it will be.
How'd you like the news that John Boehner is now a lobbyist for one of the biggest medical marijuana companies in the country?
Oh, I had a sort of a dual reaction to that. You know, what a shame that it took him so long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess better late than never, but he's doing it for the money. He sees the money available in it, obviously. It's a big investment up front, and I will not try to say that it isn't, because it's a huge investment up front. So, but, you know, he's at the point where he's working for an established company that already has presence in a few different states. And so he's and they're trading on his name, obviously.
Sure.
And that's a good thing. But I just want to point out that as a Republican and as Speaker of the House, he was party to some pretty shitty bills that that have put a lot of people behind bars for possession or selling small amounts of a medication, of a substance, you know, whether you use it recreationally or as a medication, that has never killed a single person.
That's right.
And is harmless. That has been used as medicine for thousands of years, as Dr. Gerdeman pointed out last time. And it disproportionately has affected people of color, and they are still in jail. And I would have a whole lot more respect for ex-Speaker Boehner if he would advocate for these people being released from prison.
No kidding.
You know,
Deborah, we're coming up at the top of the hour, so we're out of time. The website will be threeboysfarm.com. Once it's up and running and the dispensary is up and running, we'll have you back on. Thanks so much. It's always great talking with you.